Hello and welcome to the Ididapod. I'm Casey Grove with Alaska Public Media. We are a production of Alaska Public Media. And coming up, we have an interview actually from last year that our friend Quince Mountain of Braver Mountain Mushing recorded with Ramey Reddington. This was something that we had sort of tucked away from the podcast last year when the coronavirus pandemic was really taking off and things got a little wild, but we wanted to make sure that we got this out there because it's really a very sweet interview that Quince does with Ramey, who, if you don't know, is part of the Reddington family, obviously, who is the founding family of the Iditarod. And there's a whole lot more about the history of the Iditarod out there, but Ramey talks about not only the first couple races and how different they were from the race now, but his family's contribution to mushing and what they were interested in when they started the Iditarod. One quick thing to note is that, of course, this was recorded last year, so there are a couple things that are out of date. I think there's mentions of where different mushers are at, or at least where Ryan Reddington was at last year, which, of course, he's doing very well in this year's race in 2021. But if you hear references to the race in this interview, I think there maybe is only one. It's actually from 2020, just to keep that clear. Anyway, this interview really speaks for itself. Quince does a good job of talking to Ramey about all these different aspects of his life. And I think some of the most interesting things to me are how different mushing was, or at least long distance mushing was, back, you know, almost 50 years ago when they started this race. And I'm just going to let it play. I think it's, like I said, I think it speaks for itself. And so here's Quince Mountain talking to Ramey Reddington.
All right. So tell us who you are and your involvement with the Iditarod race.
My name is Ramey Reddington, and I ran the first Iditarod. And I always been involved with dogs, and in 1973, my dad was trying to raise money for the Iditarod, and he wanted me to take him from Anchorage to Kinnick for the Iditarod. So I said, all right, I'll take him from Anchorage to Kinnick, because I didn't plan on going any farther in Kinnick. So when I got to Kinnick, I wanted to go to Nome. So I had a tough time because I never had anything out on the trail, and it was pretty tough going for a while till I got into the checkpoints. And there was only three checkpoints in the whole race, and that was first one was McGrath and Galena and Unicleet, and that was it. So if you had a dog that got tired, you hauled it all the way to wherever you could get rid of it.
So you didn't send any food out on the trail. How did that work?
Well, we got sponsored by Prina, dog food company, and I guess I ate a few bites of that, but once I got to a place, I got a little bit of, them days you could get, it was different today, you could get help anytime, you know, so that was good.
So what did you do for meat for the dogs?
Well, I got some beaver meat and everything, some checkpoints, and I'd load up. Them days you carried a big load, so it didn't matter how much you had, everybody had a big load.
So what do you think now about what mushers carry in their sled compared to what you carried? What's changed?
Well, it's altogether different now. Everybody got a little sled and everything. And when I think it was 20-some days in the first race to finish, but everything got different. It's better trails nowadays, better everything, better food, better health, dogs and everything. But I do think the dogs years ago, a lot of them could do it today. Good dogs.
Wow. So You just went up the trail not knowing. I mean, how many started that first year? How many made it to Nome? How many did you think would make to Nome? What happened?
Well, nobody knew what we was getting into. No one, no hardly any markers on the trail. Once in a while, you'd find where somebody had a bottle of whiskey and they drank it and broke off a limb and stuck it on a tree, on a limb. But it was different. No trails, and you snowshoed a lot. And 74 was a tough year, too. I think that was the coldest and roughest year ever in the Iditarod, even up today, 74. I mean, it was cold, something else. But 73 was different race. Nobody knew anything about anything. And you could go anywhere. I mean, it wasn't, you just going and... A lot of times it was marked by a tree. Somebody would take an axe and blaze a tree. Years ago, you could look for, but there was no markers or anything like that.
And the headlamps were different then too, right?
No, yeah. It was all together. Everything's different. I think it was a gray headlight around and everything, and the batteries you used to... A D battery, big batteries, and you had to take a handful of light bulbs with you, and nowadays you don't have none of that.
So were the mushers pretty racy, or did they all kind of just camp at night together? I mean, how did that work? Were you real competitive when you stopped, or people kind of just talked to each other? What happened?
Well, it was, everybody got along good then and everything. It was different. Everybody pinned on one another them days, you know. We didn't have no radio, phones and all that. So everybody, you got in trouble, you wanted to make sure the guy with you would help you get out, or if you fell in the water or anything. I think there was more. It was just, everybody got along good, you know. It wasn't a race like it is today.
What was the most dangerous thing you saw happen out there those first couple years where you were worried about someone or yourself or a dog or what?
Well, I don't know. It was, I don't know, a lot of thin ice and farewell in there, and got warm. And 73 was not real bad weather. It was pretty mellow. But 74, if it would have been different in 74, I don't know what would have happened. But I think everything, we had a big sled, and we had sleeping bags and everything. If we got in trouble, we could get in a sleeping bag and zip up our sled bags and everything and survive. But today, it's a little bit different. You get into a bad deal now because you can't get in your sled. And I think that the race, it's altogether different now. Everybody knows where you are, and you got trackers that you can find the guy. If he's gone, you know, you can go to him. But in 73, and you was on your own, 74, you didn't know. You just did the best you could.
Do you think those trackers are ever a false sense of security? People think that they can call for help, but it doesn't really get there that quickly. Or do you think it's good to be able to call for help like that?
Well, I think so. You know, you don't want nobody to die out there if it can help and everything. I got nothing against that. But it's different today, but I think that the way the race is now, everybody knows pretty well where you are. And when we raced in 73, 74, you didn't know if the guy was 5 miles behind you or whatever. It's altogether different. And today you go into the checkpoint, you know where everybody is on the computer, where we never had none of that stuff. We didn't know if the guy was 100 miles behind or a mile behind us. So it was altogether different.
How did the rest change? Were people kind of resting in the same way where you'd rest for 4 or 6 hours, then move on a couple times a day or what?
No, it was altogether different. Nobody was in a big hurry. And, nobody was into that. It seemed like everybody camped together when somebody left. Everybody got together and for a while. Especially the race didn't really start till you got the Unicleat. Then everybody got going. But otherwise, it was everybody stuck together pretty good. Damn near all, everybody had somebody with them running dogs with, you know, two team. So in case you got in trouble, you had a little bit of help.
I saw if you look back in the standings from those first couple years, there was at least one team that had two mushers. Is that right?
Yeah, there was two brothers that ran the race. But them days you could do, I guess you could have started the race with 30 dogs if you wanted. There was no limit. And, two could go together.
So, if a musher right now, like your Pete Kaiser or Ali Zirkel or someone were sent back in time to 1974, but they had their sled, their equipment, their dogs they had now, what would all you folks back then have said about seeing someone with the sled, the dogs, the mushing the way they do now?
Well, I don't think they would be winning the race. I think, I think different kind of dogs, and I just don't think that they wouldn't have the trail and everything. I think that the dogs that won the race years ago would be still, you know, if you took the ones today back then, I think the ones that first started would be right there, because I think it was tougher and trained a little bit different, maybe not as fast, not as many miles today. Today they're pretty trained pretty darn good.
So who was the first in those years? I mean, you had to be one of the first to go over the Happy River steps. What did you think when you saw that?
That was something else. Me and Dan Seavey went straight over. There wasn't no swish back and all that. It was straight down. Me and him was the first ones to go over it.
What did you think of that?
It was steep.
Did you hang on?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he went first or I went first, but I remember a big tree at the bottom, and it was different.
So how did that race in 1974 come out for you? Did you make it to Nome?
Yeah, I come in seventh that year in 74. In 73 and 74, we started from Anchorage and went all the way to Nome. Only 2 years they did that. And I'm glad I got to do that, because I went all the way in 74 from Anchorage to Nome. So,
So how many, you must have started with about 20, 25 dogs and?
I started with 9 dogs in 73 and 9 dogs in 74 and finished with, I think, 6 or 7 in 74. In 74, my brother went and my dad went and I went. And so that was pretty darn nice.
So your dad is often called the father of the Iditarod race, as well as your father, Joe Reddington Sr. But, you know, before it started, was it kind of like a Noah's Ark scenario? I mean, did people believe that this race would really happen? What did they think of him and your family and all that?
Well, a lot of people thought he was going too strong on that, you know, going to run a dog, say no and all that. But over the years, they found out that the dogs could enjoy it and they liked it. So I think it got better, that part. But when the first started, you know, people said, man, too much. But he liked dogs. My dad did, and he wanted to go to have a race going to Nome. And he wanted to keep the dogs, and village people had a hard time racing against these guys getting here and everything. And my dad didn't want people to get rid of their dogs and everything. And that's why I think the reason we got the Iditarod here to Nome, because he wanted people in the village to keep dogs and get involved with this deal that going to Nome and everything. So I think it really helped keeping the dogs and everything in Alaska.
As opposed to the sprint racing where someone would have to fly their team down for a short event?
Yeah, but a lot of people got involved in villages from, we had them from everywhere, and it was really good because more people got involved in the villages and everything, and they really liked, and years ago, dog racing was probably one of the biggest things there was, because there wasn't no basketball and boat racing and snow machine race. It was mostly the dogs, and it was really a good deal for the people to see us come to Nome and everything.
So where did you get those dogs for your first team? That must have been from your dad?
Well, my first in 73, yeah, most of them was my dad. And then in 74, a lot of them that I owned and everything. But, yeah, they were some pretty good dogs. Some of them ran the rendezvous that year and everything. And I still think they could do it today and compete pretty good in the Iditarod.
So where did you get them? The ones that were yours in 74, you bred them up, or what happened?
Well, I bred them up and everything, and then I had some that come from a guy in Betha area, Charlie Fitka, and some of them, I think there was four of them, and they was pretty good.
So now you make your living raising and training sled dogs still to this day, and your dogs are really sought after. So for your bloodlines, what do you look for in a good dog that you would choose to breed?
Well, I look for one that's got nice hair and good feet, small feet. If I can find them, a male that got smaller feet and everything, but today, you know, we boot them up all the time now and everything, so it don't really matter too much on the feet part. But years ago, we always tried to breed a little feet, you know, tight feet. But, you know, the first year, we didn't even know nothing about booties or anything. So, you know, and coats for the dogs and everything, it was different. And there was more longer-haired huskies, too, you know. But today, if you've got shorter hair, we put a coat on them and all that.
So you talk about Rondi. If you were racing again, you know, this year, and you got to choose, you know, and you're on 4th Avenue, do you want to be starting Rondi or Iditarod?
Well, I'd want to go Iditarod, but I like the rendezvous. I've been 5th in the rendezvous before, 4th the last day, 3rd day. And I like them both. I even went down this year and watched a rendezvous the first day. My wife, she works with a junior Iditarod, so we went down and watched the rendezvous. We like all dog racing, sprint and distance, middle distance, whatever it is, we like racing.
Reddingtons are definitely one of the doggiest families in Alaska, and I know you got to get going. I appreciate your time. But if people are watching this year, you have two sons in the race this year in Iditarod. Can you tell us a little bit about them and what people might look for in their teams and what you like about their training and so on?
I think they're going to be do pretty good in the race. Ryan, he won the Bear Grease this year. I look for him to have a good team. Robert been training this year, and been a lot of snow where he is, and I think that the way it looks, the side of the road this year could really help him a lot. I think it's going to be a lot of snow, slow going maybe. It's hard telling. If it gets warm, it might get back down, but I think there's a lot of snow out there. And there's a lot of families that's real doggy. I think Mike Williams Jr. and Mike Sr. are one of the doggiest people I know. Stevie's are doggy. All my folks are doggy. There's a lot of people really like dogs.
Well, how did you find a wife who was so into the sport with you all these years?
Well, my wife is from Uniclet, one of the checkpoints on the trail, and her grandfather ran dogs. He was a mail, carried the mail and everything by dog team, and she likes dogs, and we got a bunch right now. We got about 50 dogs, and we enjoy the dogs.
Yeah, it's neat to see what you two do together. Barb was saying, you know, how much she looks forward to helping get the puppies started, and you two both do the tours at Iditarod headquarters in summer. So we'll leave with this, but if you can tell people, if they want to come out and have a ride with you and your dogs this summer, where should they go, and how much is it? What are the details?
Well, I work for the Iditarod. We do rides there. We're there from middle of May to September the 15th, and it just shows the dogs that ran the race and what they do and how they like to run, and you can ask anything about the dogs, and we'll tell you what we know about them.
So if people come to Wasilla, but they got a really, it's probably about $100, $200, right?
No, my deal is I take them for a short ride. It's $10 a person, and a nice little ride, darn near a quarter of a mile. And it's a good deal to just let you see what how the dogs enjoy doing this.
All right, and puppies?
Yeah, and we got puppies there, too, to look at and pick up, and you can pet them, and the big dogs are real friendly, too, and nice. So it's good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I think a lot of people will be watching Reddington's this Iditarod. So good luck to all of you.
That was dog musher Quince Mountain interviewing Ramey Reddington, son of Joe Reddington, senior founder of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, recorded in 2020. I'm Casey Grove with Alaska Public Media. Stay tuned for another episode of the Iditapod.